Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, whose mission is to extend Christian ministry by caring for the whole person, body, mind, and spirit, and by working with others to improve health and quality of life in our communities. Now, here's your host, Tom McGovern.
Good afternoon, I'm Tom McGovern, and welcome to Faith Matters. Today, our special guest is Dr. Jerry Campbell, recently returned to Lubbock after sojourning elsewhere in many places in his career as an academician, teacher, in many, many, many roles. Jerry, welcome to the program this afternoon.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jerry, in our conversation prior to coming on air, you mentioned that you were born in Cress. Tell us a little about your childhood and the background in Cress.
I may have led you astray. I was born in Matador, and then my family had a ranch near Roaring Springs, which is still in the family. And then we moved when I was a youngster to Cress, 13 miles west of Cress, to a farm.
So your dad was a cotton farmer and...
My dad was a cotton farmer, grew a little bit of grain sorghum and wheat occasionally and soybeans.
So you have deep roots in West Texas, obviously. We were talking about the influence of the Scots and the Scottish syndicate that had the ranches. Well, Matador was part of that great Scottish initiative. At least they were running the managers, perhaps, of the ranches in those early years.
I have read at one time at its zenith, the Matador Ranch covered 7 million acres in a variety of states. It was a large enterprise.
A huge conglomerate in those early days.
In those early days.
In the cattle business,
that's right.
Mainly.
Okay. The late 19th, early 20th century.
Okay. And then you also mentioned that you had part of this program with our beloved Ted Dodds, which, because of some glitch in the technology, never aired. So here we are, shall we say, continuing that conversation with Ted.
I met Ted when I went away to college at McMurray College in Abilene, Texas. Ted was my pastor. He was very young. He was the Ted we came to know and love throughout his life. He was a marvelous person from his youngest days.
Absolutely, and we share him and Betty and the family as beloved friends, and we honor them today.
One of my greatest pleasures in retirement was coming back here and finding Ted and Betty still here, and I got here just in time. And we acknowledge he would be embarrassed if we talked too nicely about him, so we'll be careful.
Okay, so we have said enough. We will honor his desire. Not for recognition, but honor his beautiful life and of Betty, both of them, their lives of service.
Amen.
Amen, amen. You have done many things in your wonderful lifetime, but as a child, as a young person, you were diagnosed with a heart condition.
I was born with a congenitally defective aortic valve and was not expected to live far into my teens. In 1959, I became the sixth experiment of Dr. Michael DeBakey down in Houston to surgically repair an aortic valve in a child. There were no prostheses in the 50s.
From childhood onwards, you've had to face the challenge of a heart that needs attention.
It has been a really good experience for me, not necessarily an easy one. I had heart surgery. I've now had it 9 times. I have worn out a number of those valves. They weren't thinking about someone as rambunctious as I apparently have proven to be when they developed them. It has given me a kind of edge of feeling as if I'm going to accomplish something, I have to do it now.
So the here and now is very important for you?
The here and now is very important, and I've felt since I was 13 as if I were living on borrowed time, on grace. This is not time I'm owed. I have no contract with God for X number of days. I'm past my normal time.
This is the day the Lord has made. Let us be glad and be productive in it. Is that...
That's exactly right.
To mimic the scriptures?
That's right.
That's what you've learned through your illness and from your illness too.
It has given me an incentive to work hard and also to try to make a difference.
And you certainly have made a difference in what you've shared with me. From the early years in Cress, you went on to McMurray in Abilene, where you met Ted. After completing your studies in at McMurray, where did you go from there?
I decided to go to seminary, and so I went to the Duke Divinity School at Duke University.
What kind of an experience was that for you?
Well, it was a culture shock. I've gone through several culture shocks in my...
You mentioned that returning to Lubbock from the Los Angeles area last year was the same thing.
That's correct. Culture shocks are good for me, I believe. But Duke was a kind of a broadening of my horizons, meeting a somewhat more diverse cosmopolitan community of people, as faculties tend to be in these large universities, and as the student bodies tend to be. They recruit even some international students and so forth. It was a shock, but a good one.
What do you remember most about your time at Duke?
I'm going to mention two things. One thing I remember most are the important people in my life. Everywhere I've gone, I've met people who have become important for me. The second way I would answer that question is I was at Duke during that crazy time when there were uprisings on college campuses, and the spirit of the 60s was at its peak. You know, the Kent College happenings took place, and there was one of those on the Duke campus. And I remember the spirit of the young people thinking war was wrong and we should be able to make a difference. And then we became old and rich and gave it up.
Jerry, we will take a quick break. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Tom McGovern. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information on cardiac care is available online at www.covenanthealth.org. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, here's your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Tom McGovern, and our special guest is Jerry Campbell. Jerry, when we went on break, you were talking about the excitement of being in the seminary in the 60s with all of the challenges and all of the excitement and the willingness maybe to look at a different way at problems, challenges of the human existence. After your time at Duke, where did your journey take you after that?
I finished seminary at probably one of the worst times in history to have finished seminary if one was interested in teaching, which I was, because Lyndon Johnson's Great Society had come on hard times. State schools had done away with their departments of religion, and the market was flooded with professors. So instead of going on to do a PhD in New Testament or perhaps a Hebrew Bible, I went to library school at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill because there were still jobs in libraries and seminaries.
And still a love of books and those who took care of the books.
That's correct.
As it was, as libraries were in those days. So following, after completing your training in library sciences, I guess it was called library sciences, then the next stop in your journey.
The next stop in the journey was to actually take an honest job, go to work as a almost adult at the Iliff School of Theology in Denver, Colorado, which is one of the 13 United Methodist-related seminaries.
You are Methodist by...
I am United Methodist and was ordained a clergyman as a part of my interest in working in theological education.
You began your career as a librarian then.
That is correct. And one of the things I did, which was a bit different, was in a very primitive way, automated the library card catalog at Iliff by putting it on computer output microfiche.
Which was revolutionary for those days.
It was revolutionary. The faculty could take the catalog home in their pocket.
Instead of going to those cards, which I remember
going to the cards
with great affection, thumbing through cars.
We kept the cars, but
as a backup.
But we had the new computer output microform way of doing business. It was a marvelous environment. I loved ILIF, still do. It had a great faculty. The colleagues were wonderful to a young fellow like me, just beginning my work. So it was a great place to begin.
So from there you went to.
I was recruited to be the head of the library at Perkins School of Theology, reconnected with Ted, and continued my library career. I decided I wanted to automate that library as well. The provost of the university said, "You'll do no such thing unless unless you automate the whole system," which I did. I sort of served as the first systems librarian at SMU and automated the entire system. I got a grant to do that, so it cost the university very little. The folks at Duke were having trouble getting their library automated, and Duke recruited me after 5 years at SMU, recruited me to be a university librarian.
So you were in the world of holy books for many, many decades of your life.
I was, and it was absolutely wonderful. I have never been in a bad library in my life, and I, you know,
never met a book you didn't like.
I never met a book I didn't like, which was so hard to convince some people of that, because at the same time I loved the libraries and the books, I was automating the systems. It was the primitive beginning of what we now have when we go to Google to find a resource.
How wonderful. Along the way, Jerry, you met your beloved wife. Tell us a little about that.
I was a crest kangaroo, junior in high school. I wanted a summer job, and because of my heart situation, I was not really suitable to work on the farm except light work. Went to Plainview, the big town, and got a job in Plains Drugstore as a stock boy, which was an exciting job for me. I'd never seen all the likes of the drugs and the so forth. But most exciting was the clerk, a young woman named Lavita Sinclair. There was a company policy against employee dating. I went to the boss and said, "I'm going to have to quit." And he said, "Why? You're doing a good job." And I said, "Well, I want to date one of your other employees." Well, they changed the policy. So Vita and I got to go dating. I really wanted to appear macho and tough, so I took her watermelon stealing on our first date. And it all went well until we got caught in someone's field looking for a watermelon.
With the intent to steal.
With the intent to take it, let's say. And instead of getting the shotgun out and getting after me, you know, I was bold enough to take her watermelon stealing, but I took her to a neighbor. She didn't know it was a neighbor near our farm. And he said, "Jerry, you looking for a watermelon?" I said, "Yes,
yes sir."
And he told me where to find one.
So there was a blessed outcome from.
So there was a blessed outcome. And she said, "You faker, you know." But anyway, she.
Subsequently, you married.
So we married, we had a wonderful life together. We have one wonderful child, a daughter, Denise, who now lives in Sarasota, Florida.
You mentioned in passing that she lived close to when we were in our sojourn in California, in Pasadena. She lived close to where we lived during those journeys.
That's correct. It's a small world. My daughter lived very close to where you were in Altadena. My wife was with me through thick and thin. I used to call her my cheat sheet because she could remember everyone's name, how many children they had, where they were going to school, and so forth. In my role as a university librarian or at USC as a dean, we would be in the receiving line for guests that I'd invited here or there, and she would say, "Now, this is Chuck and Regina, and they have three children, and they are in." So I always seem to know everyone.
So but thanks to your wife cataloging your memory of people, she served as a beautiful partner for you in the many places that you found yourself in the course of your professional
life. That's correct. I'm married up.
Jerry, we'll be right back after a quick break. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Tom McGovern. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information on cardiac care is available online at www.covenanthealth.org. The views, opinions, and comments that are expressed on this program are solely those of the host and guest and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions of KTTZ-FM, Texas Tech Public Media, Texas Tech University, Texas Tech University System, or our faculty and staff, our affiliates, our partners, and our sponsors. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, here's your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Tom McGovern with our special guest this afternoon, Jerry Campbell. Jerry, before we went on break, you were recalling the wonderful life that you shared with your wife. If I may, I'd like you to recall for us, she died quite recently.
Yes, she died in April of 2010. It was really a very unexpected, somewhat bizarre circumstance. She broke her ankle, became infected. She ended up with double pneumonia and died 19 days later. It was a totally unforeseen, unexpected circumstance.
And a profound, profound loss for you of a loved one. And out of this loss came many things, but also a beautiful book called Choosing to Live, Enduring the Loss of a Loved One. Tell us a little about the grieving process as you have described it and experienced it through this book.
I think our culture in some ways doesn't deal so well with the grieving process. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and her partner Kessler have described very well the stages of grief.
Which is pioneering work in the grief world,
But we haven't taught ourselves very well how to use those stages personally to help us get through grief. When Vita died, I was simultaneously president of the Claremont School of Theology, which is another United Methodist seminary in Claremont, California, Claremont Lincoln University, which is a university that I had founded with the help of Mr. David Lincoln and Mel Gottlieb, one of my Jewish friends, and a Muslim friend, Jihad Turk. And we had come together to form this new university. It was not a convenient time. Death does not observe our needs, it comes when it will come. And I was in the midst of a terribly important project. So the question was, how do I grieve and continue to provide leadership to this project I had gotten started? I needed a way to get through my own grief. And so I developed what I called a grief calendar based on the Kubler-Ross Kessler stages of grief. And I actually put it in my calendar. And I set aside times when I could break down and grieve, so that the other times I could keep my professional persona and be president of institution.
The grief was incorporated into your daily life, at the same time being able to maintain the energy for the work at hand. Jerry, we have a copy of the book, Choosing to Live, Enduring the Loss of a Loved One, with us this afternoon. And I love for people who have authored books to read. Is there some passage from the book for today where you would choose as being important to share with our listeners?
I decided when I'd finished writing the book and gone through the grief process, there was a sixth stage that I have added to the five stages of Kubler-Ross, and that is a stage of growth. It was tempting when I suffered the loss of Vita to privatize the experience, to become lost in self-pity. What I have called the growth stage allowed me to accept and internalize an awareness that the whole experience was not just about me. It was also about the universal struggles we humans have dealing with death, how our very identity changes when someone we love dies, and how our struggle with our understanding of a reality we call God is lifelong. But perhaps the most important contribution for me from the growth stage was my rediscovery of the zest for life. Going back through my grief, remembering and writing about Vita, reflecting on family and friends, recalling how good and positive our life had been, somehow this restored my hope for what life still might hold for me. I found new enthusiasm for life out of the process of dealing with what for me had been life's greatest loss.
A great new enthusiasm for life from what you had perceived, experienced, not perceived, as life's greatest loss.
That's right.
You certainly, Jerry, exemplify that enthusiasm in our brief conversation, our brief meeting today. And life as it goes forward for you from this point, you're now back in Lubbock, back with us in this beloved community, living with your brother?
My brother and sister-in-law have a house with what was called a mother-in-law's apartment. I told my sister-in-law it's now a brother-in-law's apartment.
Oh, lovely.
They're wonderful people. It's been very good for me. I don't disturb their life, but I don't feel totally alone in my life.
You mentioned at the beginning of our conversation this afternoon that your life is built around relationships. It's not the places we've been or the degrees we have. It's the richness of the relationships we have experienced during our lifetime. And certainly you have shared with us some of the relationships that have grown out of your professional work, out of the places you have been, out of the communities that you've been privileged to provide leadership for. It's hard, you know, to identify any particular aspect of your life as being more important than another because they are sequential, they're part of a whole. But looking back, what do you treasure from your time in Claremont? Or what did you see as the vision that inspired your work at Claremont?
The thing that inspired my work most was seeing the diversity that the Claremont community and the Los Angeles area provides. You know, 20 million people, 423 different languages spoken, more ethnic groups than one can imagine and count. And the challenge for those communities is how to live together in spite of religious, ethnic, political, and other major differences. And what I learned in that place, we need ways to bridge the differences that separate us because collaboration is the only basis on which human life is going to thrive and prosper.
Jerry, it's been a wonderful time with you this afternoon, and I love the concluding statement that it's collaboration across perceived differences out of which we create the variety of community, the diversity, and the wonderful diversity as God's people, that this is our hope for life and for ongoing community and for a shared, meaningful existence together. Jerry, I will hope to invite you back again to continue this conversation, if you will.
Tom, thank you. I'd love to come again.
It's been such a privilege for Chuck and myself to be with you in the studio this afternoon. Thank you, thank you.
You've been listening to Faith Matters with your host, Tom McGovern. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, working to improve health and quality of life in our community. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a service of Texas Tech Public Media.